As a glass-topped coffee table shattered under the impact of his trench-coated back and he slammed to the floor, Benton would have been first to admit that he'd had better days. All the more so, considering that he was facing death at the hands of an opponent who looked as though he'd qualified for next year's old-age pension. It had all gone sour so quickly. Less than 3 hours ago, the Brigadier had given him his orders. Unit investigations into a major corporation had revealed suspicious evidence. Electronic components which, while unremarkable at first sight, had proceeded to baffle the organization's best scientific minds. While such devices were feasible, they concluded, their efficiency and compactness were beyond current technological capacities. Even the best brains in Japan were still a good decade or two behind these inventions. More worryingly, each one that they examined contained what appeared to be an extraneous component, one for which they still hadn't managed to fathom the function. Unit had one possible lead, a freelance electronics inventor named Banks, who'd recently been captured by a long-distance lens, taking a suspicious brown envelope from an anonymous man in central London. Benton's orders had been simple. Go to the man's Pimlico address, sound him out, and, if necessary, escort him back to the HQ for further questioning. Banks had opened the door to his fifth-floor flat readily, a meek-looking fellow in his early 60s, dressed neatly in waistcoat, tie, and suit trousers, his remaining grey hair neatly parted around a large central bald patch. He'd peered at Benton's ID, looked a little bewildered, but allowed him inside and announced that he'd just made himself a coffee and would Benton like one as well. Never one to refuse a coffee, he'd agreed. Banks had bustled off into his kitchen. There was a rattle of crockery and a hiss of steam, and he reappeared after a minute or two, beaming and holding out a china cup of what smelled very like a fine espresso to his visitor. "Sit down. Milk and sugar is on the table," he smiled. Benton had sat already, added three sugars and a dash of milk, and raised the drink to his lips as he mentally prepared his opening questions. The coffee was good, very good. Setting his cup down, he favoured Banks with his most encouraging smile.
"Well, to start with, would you mind telling me what you're working on at the moment? We've heard rumours that it's something outright revolutionary in the field of electronics."
Nodding eagerly, Banks leaned forward.
"Indeed. Obviously it all's very hush-hush right now, so I'm afraid that I cannot go into too much technical detail."
Benton smiled easily back.
"That's fine by me. I don't understand much of that scientific stuff anyway." "Well, our company has established itself at the head of the market through logical planning and a programme of thorough innovation. A good many countries are making advances in our field, but they work by themselves. We've obtained the services of the best brains from all over the world for our business. Japanese, of course, but also Americans and a good number of Europeans, Swiss, German, Spanish, oh, and plenty of Brits, of course."
He chuckled indulgently.
"In other words, a true international think tank. Between us, we're coming up with advances that keep us well ahead of any single nation in such matters."
Benton nodded sagely and sipped more of the coffee with pleasure. It was almost as good as his own.
"That's very interesting, Mr. Banks. What sort of things are you working on?" "Don't worry, as I say, I'm no technician, just interested in your overall plans."
Banks smiled conspiratorially.
"Well, I'm sure that there's no harm in giving you a general description. We're currently working on an invention which will make us world leaders in the area of transistor technology. It's all based around an amazing innovation which we've christened micro-monolithic circuitry."
Just as he was getting into his stride, a phone jangled from the kitchen. He unfolded himself carefully from his seat.
"If you'll please excuse me for a few moments, Mr. Benton. This could be important business discussion. I'll be back with you as soon as I can." "No worries, Gov. I'm not going anywhere in a hurry."
As Banks went to answer the phone, Benton was turning over the man's words. Micro-monolithic circuitry? What the hell was that? The only monoliths that he knew about were in Stonehenge. His host had shut the kitchen door behind him, so all that Benton heard of the conversation were muffled words. A couple of minutes passed, Benton glanced idly at his watch. Boffins. It could be ages before he came back. Never mind. All the more time to finish his drink. He was just draining the last dregs when the door opened again and Banks emerged, an affable expression on his face. I'm very sorry about this, Mr. Benton. Benton was about to explain that there was no need to apologise and maybe ask for a refill as Banks crossed back to the table and without warning aimed a surprisingly fast kick straight at Benton's head. Caught by surprise, he let out a startled yell. Even as his reflexes came to his aid, he flung his arms up to block, grabbing the old man's leg and pushing it away hard. But the leg was moving with amazing force for such a frail old man, and even as he twisted the kick away, the strength behind it knocked him from his seat and flat onto the floor. A smile had disappeared from Banks's face. In fact, it was expressionless. He moved swiftly to where Benton was lying, raising a foot to stamp on him where he lay. Benton managed to spring up himself and pivot around his opponent, grabbing his arms and forcing them behind his back. All seemed set to come to a divisive end, until Banks flung his arms open, effortlessly breaking Benton's muscular grip and sending him staggering backwards. His back hit the flat wall as Banks aimed a punch at his face. He jerked his head smartly aside, and the old man's fist hit the wall, smashing a deep hole in the heavy concrete. Nor did Banks show even the slightest sign of pain, only an angry snarl as he prepared to strike again. Shaking off concrete chips, Benton backed away fast, forcing down panic and sizing up his surprising opponent. Superhuman strength, apparently invulnerable to pain, he'd been taught at his training time and time to expect the unexpected. Anything on Earth or even beyond, as the Brig had said with a sly smile, this was the first time that he'd actually encountered it. The words of his martial arts teacher, the old Chinaman who'd only been introduced as Chuan, came back clearly. No opponent is unbeatable, no matter how much so they may appear. If your first strike fails, then strike again elsewhere. Find the flaw in the stone. Benton put that advice into action, aiming a quick flurry of punches at Banks's face and chest, and then promptly wished that he hadn't. Punching Banks had been like punching a concrete wall himself. As he bit down on a cry of pain, Banks charged, hands slashing the air. He clearly wanted his opponent dead and had the power to do so. The power, but not the skill, Benton dodged the blows, gripped his enemy's extended arms and executed a perfect judo throw, slamming him to the carpet. It should have at least stunned him, if not rendered him unconscious. Instead, he rolled over with a shake of his head and leapt back to his feet, aiming a vicious kick at Benton's midriff, which he barely managed to avoid. Banks had momentarily thrown his own balance off, his foot coming down on a heavy mahogany chair which smashed under the impact. Benton was running through the other things that Chuan had taught him.
There is no shame in using weapons against an opponent. In securing your victory, all things are permissible.
A large Art Deco lamp made of what looked like stainless steel stood on the bookshelves next to him. Grabbing it, he hefted the makeshift club and swung it. The old man managed to block the blow and grab the lamp, wrenching it from Benton's grip and dropping it to the carpet. Incredibly, the metal stem was mangled where his opponent had gripped it. As he froze in shock, Banks had launched himself at him, knocking him over directly onto the coffee table, landing squarely on top of him and reaching for his throat once more. The old man was surprisingly heavy, and the hand circled his neck with that appalling strength. As the fingers tightened, Benton knew that he had only moments left to live. Unless he could buy himself some time, forget Chuan, it was time for some dirty tricks that he'd learned not in the dojo, but the playground. Summoning up all the strength in his solid frame, he pulled hard at his opponent's hands, at the same time pushing his legs up hard. It was like lifting an overloaded barbell. But Banks, surprised, lost his grip and thudded to the carpet himself as Benton staggered to his feet again. He hadn't wanted to do this, but it was clearly now a case of kill or be killed, and he reached under his coat for the shoulder holster. But Banks appeared to be a man possessed, lurching up again and rushing straight at Benton as he braced against the wall by the window. No time to draw the gun, reflexes kicked in again along with inspiration. He stepped quickly to one side, and as Banks hurtled towards the space where he'd just been, grabbed an arm tightly and spun back straight through the window. He erupted through the panes in an explosion of glass and hurtled down the five-floor drop. He was halfway through, a hoarse yell of dismay, when he hit the solid concrete slabs of the pavement below. Benton drew his revolver and ran down the stairs at full tilt, already preparing a reasonable cover story in case any passers-by showed their faces. Luck was on his side, and no other pedestrians had reached the body by the time that Benton reached the street, although two or three were running towards him. Banks lay unmoving, and the angle of his neck showed that he wasn't playing possum. Benton didn't even bother checking for a pulse. Instead, he rifled quickly through Banks's jacket pocket, found and withdrew his wallet, then stood up to intercept the first of the arrivals. The man's face was a white mask of dismay. Benton caught him in his tracks, leaving him no time to gather his thoughts. The briefest flash of his ID, no time for the other to read it fully. A brusque wave towards a nearby phone booth. The man swallowed, nodded hurriedly, and turned to speak to the pair who were pounding up the road to join him. Benton strode to the booth and shut the door firmly behind him, one eye on the small group around the dead man. He opened Banks's wallet and went through the contents. Some banknotes, and credit cards, and a business card. He looked more closely at the last. At least he had a suspicion that could be confirmed. Picking up the Bakelite receiver, he phoned the code number. Whatever was going on at International Electromatics, it was clearly far from innocent.